What if there were a fountain of youth pill that could add decades to your life? Would you take it? Unlocking the Fountain is a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or even reverse it.
When do you think we're going to have the first 150-year-old? I think that person's already alive.
Unlocking the Fountain. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
So it's over in this corner here.
So and it went from one end of our community right to the other.
In Edson, Alberta, Mayor Kevin Zahara shows me where one of the most contentious mega projects in recent Canadian history runs through his town. Edson sits along the first leg of the Trans Mountain Pipeline. A section of it cuts right underneath the beloved local ballpark.
So this is a wonderful place in the summertime. If you come out here on a weeknight, even later in the evenings, it is bustling with activity, with all kinds of different teams.
During construction, the pipeline project meant a timeout for a section of the ballpark.
There has been a lot of disappointment as the construction has taken longer than expected, but we are now seeing this facility being upgraded, which is really important.
I'm trying to resist the obvious Field of Dreams reference here, unsuccessfully. But I guess if you build it, they will come, is the idea.
Well, if you build it, it will be utilized, especially out here.
Zahara is confident that's true of new baseball diamonds and the pipeline expansion, even though it's involved extra innings and no shortage of curveballs.
In 2016, we announced an approval for the Trans Mountain Expansion Project. This project has the potential to create thousands of solid middle-class jobs for Canadians.
The Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion is expected to start shipping Alberta oil to the BC coast on May 1st. It's been a long time coming. 12 years of protests, court challenges.
The Federal Court of Appeal has handed some Indigenous groups an important victory, and it means a huge setback for the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion.
And regulatory hurdles. Then there's the cost. When the federal government stepped in to buy the project 6 years ago, the estimated price tag was $7.4 billion. But now the cost has ballooned to $34 billion. I'm Alison Dempster, a CBC producer based in Calgary, and this is Storylines. This week, as the controversial Trans Mountain expansion nears the finish line, we'll travel along the pipeline route from Edmonton to Burnaby. I'll introduce you to people who worked on the project, campaigned against it, and who one day hope to own it. That's why we're in Edson, about 2 hours west of Edmonton. In Edson, the project meant jobs, along with plenty of hotel and restaurant business during construction.
There was a ripple effect throughout the community, and it was very positive.
Soon, the newly twinned pipeline will nearly triple the flow of crude from Alberta to the west coast to 890,000 barrels a day.
This has been, you know, talked about for many, many years. So seeing that oil flowing is going to be vitally important and very excited to see that happen.
A shortage of pipeline space has been a thorn in the side of Alberta oil producers for years. It's a large part of the reason they take a price discount on their product compared to U.S. competitors. TMX, Canada's only pipeline to the West Coast, will help companies reach new markets in Asia and California. That means a more competitive price for Alberta oil.
If we can get our resources to other markets, that's just wonderfully positive for us. I can't wait for that day to happen.
At a coffee shop in Edson, there's a sense of relief now that the project is nearing the finish line. But some people in the community are frustrated with the cost.
I've seen so many pipelines go in the ground 3 to 4 times as fast. They seem to use every excuse as they can to put a hold on things because of environmental and, you know, issues going on, and these delays just cause taxpayers and everybody, you know, millions of, not billions of dollars. If the government wasn't involved and you had normal pipeline companies going and doing it, I mean, it would be done probably a third of the time because, you know, we're in the oil patch, we get things done.
The original Trans Mountain Pipeline was built in the early 1950s.
It was logical that a pipeline be run to the great seaport city of Vancouver from the newly developed oil field of Alberta.
It took 2.5 years to build.
And through it coursed the wonderful fluid that would turn the wheels of commerce and industry.
6 decades later,
shame on you! Shame on you!
Things had changed.
What are you going to tell your
Kinder Morgan's plans to twin the line were greeted with fierce opposition from activists concerned about environmental impacts, climate change, and Indigenous rights. The BC government attempted to block the project through the courts.
Kinder Morgan is hitting pause on the expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline in British Columbia. It comes after weeks of protests.
In 2018, Kinder Morgan threw in the towel. The federal government decided to step in and bought the pipeline for $4.5 billion. After another court challenge, more Indigenous consultation, and further environmental review, the project got a green light in 2019.
Today, I am announcing that our government has newly approved the Trans Mountain Expansion Project going forward.
The federal government argued it was in the national interest. Where some saw national interest, others saw opportunity for jobs in Indigenous communities.
My name is Paul Donald. I'm the CEO at Simp Resources Group.
Donald runs the economic development arm of the Simp First Nation in BC's southern interior.
Roughly a third of that pipeline goes through our traditional territory. So without our participation, without our stamp of approval, it would not have gone ahead.
Simp Resources grew from roughly 40 employees to 200 at the peak of pipeline construction.
It's given us the ability to show what we can do as a company.
Donald's crew was contracted by Trans Mountain to help test and repair a 150-kilometer stretch of the pipeline that runs through Jasper National Park and Mount Robson Provincial Park. That meant navigating strict environmental standards.
Those swallows under that bridge?
Yeah. Some species are more hardy than others in what their tolerance levels to disturbance and noises are.
At the Simp Resources office, employees swap stories about the wildlife they tried to protect during the project. Engineer Chris Sabula says crews made sure not to disturb nesting birds. They temporarily relocated fish and rare plants.
We had a team of people trapping the toads, and then once we got those toads, we relocated them to an area and fenced around the location so they can't get back in before we started working.
How do you feel about the lengths you went to and the time it took?
If they didn't commit to the environmental standards that they did, I don't know that the First Nation would have said, yeah, let's do it, because it was a contentious issue at the First Nation level within the community. It certainly wasn't everyone raised their hands and said, yeah, let's do this. Everyone raised their hands and said, okay, I have some concerns. So Trans Mountain had to make those commitments, otherwise it wouldn't have gone through.
Over the course of the project, contractors also dealt with numerous setbacks, wildfires, devastating flooding, and a pandemic, all adding to the price tag of $34 billion, almost five times the original estimate. A troubling number, especially for those who didn't want the pipeline in the first place.
I feel defeated. We're at the end of that pipeline, and we're going to suffer.
Ray Harris is an elder and commercial fisherman.
My traditional name is Shalkwilam. I'm from the Shaminas tribe on the east side of Vancouver Island here.
Harris pushed against the Trans Mountain Project in regulatory hearings, sharing traditional stories about the sea life his community relies on and concerns about already stressed fish populations. The pipeline expansion means the number of oil tankers traveling through coastal waters will soon increase from about one per week to one a day.
I just think that we were used to say, well, we heard from you, and we're still going to do it. Sometimes we're just dismissed. We're dismissed by industry, and industry has a great influence on our governments.
Harris is not alone with his concerns. For other coastal First Nations, TMX brings too many risks.
My name is Reuben George of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation and manager of Sacred Trust, which is the initiative to stop the TMX pipeline. Right now, we're standing at the shores of Cates Park, Wayewachin. Just looking right across from us is the TMX port. Wayewachin means facing the water, but this also was an old ancient site of my people.
As George explains his ancestral connection to the waters of the Burrard Inlet, he's interrupted.
It's going to right there. I think there's two.
By a welcome sight.
Sorry. You never ever see sea lions up here. Wow, never see sea lions up here. It's beautiful.
Protecting marine life is one of George's big concerns with TMX. Canada's energy regulator has said the project would cause significant adverse environmental effects on the southern resident killer whale population.
We take all the risk with minimum benefits. And I think the more Canadians learn about the disastrous costs of this, and not if, but when a spill will happen, that's the legacy that I think the Liberals will have. It's we're not meeting our climate change goals, and we never will, and it's going to get worse.
George is also leery about the federal government's plans to sell the pipeline after it's complete. Potential buyers include a number of Indigenous coalitions.
What it still comes out to is economic smallpox for the First Nations. It's a stranded asset.
Michael Labordé sees it differently.
You drove over it, so when you turned in...
The pipeline runs through his small ranch on the Whispering Pines Reserve north of Kamloops.
I have 5 head of horses. That's why I wear a cowboy hat, and that's what I love to do.
Labordé is also the executive vice president of the Western Indigenous Pipeline Group. Its goal, a 51% stake in the Trans Mountain Pipeline.
This is our chance to have a substantial piece of the pipeline where our influence cannot be denied. Everybody talks, well, how are we going to do reconciliation? And they ask this question over and over. Well, include us.
Labordé says almost 40 First Nations in BC and Alberta have signed on to own a piece of the pipeline.
The revenue from the pipeline would help a great deal, a great deal. And that's what they're looking for. They want that autonomy. Then you can address the housing shortages on your reserves. You can address the elders' needs on your reserves. You can address the school needs on your reserves. It would be a game changer here.
Labordé expects the sale price of the pipeline will be far lower than what it costs to build. Industry analysts agree. They say taxpayers should brace for some upfront losses.
There's probably $15+ billion that are going to be written off from this experience.
Richard Masson is an executive fellow with the University of Calgary's School of Public Policy. He says the cost overruns also mean oil companies will pay higher tolls to move their product.
Some of those costs get passed through to the shippers. And it does mean that there's less profitability for them, and less profitability means less royalties and less taxes for Canada.
The Trans Mountain saga has left Masson with one question.
How do we ensure that it doesn't happen again? Because for international investors, you know, we already had a tough go reputation-wise, but this is the kind of thing that really is a black eye for Canada. My view is we wouldn't have built it if we knew it was going to cost $34 billion. And so we end up in a situation where it's done. There's benefits that are going to come from it, but I can't see it allowing for anybody to go to their board of directors and say, now I want to build another one of these. Or based on this experience, I want to try and revive Keystone XL, right? These are the things that really scare investors away.
For Lori Williams, TMX has always seemed fated to be the last mega project of its kind. She's a political science professor at Mount Royal University.
I have thought this would be the last pipeline from the time that the investment was announced. Just seeing the reaction, the opposition, the hurdles, the cost overruns, everything to do with this. This is just a very difficult thing to justify as environmental concerns increase. As the benefits start flowing from this, some of the criticism might dissipate. But let's be realistic. Right now, we're talking about $34 billion spent on this. It's going to take a long time for that money to come back. In other words, for the costs to be returned to the federal government.
Come May 1st, Trans Mountain says the pipeline will be ready to deliver bigger shipments of Alberta oil and a complicated legacy. We need to take a quick break. Storylines will be right back.
From CBC Podcasts and the Fifth Estate, Brainwashed is a multi-part investigation into the CIA's experiments in mind control. From the Cold War and MKUltra to the so-called War on Terror, we learn about a psychiatrist who used his patients as human guinea pigs and what happens when the military and medicine collide. Listen to Brainwashed on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Trans Mountain Pipeline runs through dense boreal forest, rugged mountain ranges, and rolling river valleys. It's more than 1,100 kilometers long. That's roughly the distance between Paris and Rome. Back in 2019, Anna Maria Tremonti, the then host of The Current, took a road trip along the pipeline route to talk with Canadians about the project. With the Trans Mountain expansion almost complete, we thought we'd hit the road with Anna Maria again. In her documentary, one of her first stops is a guest house near Jasper, Alberta.
Yeah, my name is Rocky Notness, and I operate a small guest ranch here in the foothills near Hinton and near Jasper.
Rocky's ecotourism business overlooks rolling meadows. There are rustic cabins and stables where he boards horses. It's all run out of a low-energy straw bale house that his friend Paul helped him build.
My name is Paul Belanger. I'm co-chair of Keepers of the Athabasca. We're an activist group focusing on protection of the Athabasca watershed.
Paul's business works to get houses off the grid.
The famous story here is environmentalists in Alberta don't die due to attacks, they die from being ignored to death.
Paul has a complicated view of this pipeline.
A year ago or 2 years ago, I thought the Trans Mountain expansion was a good option compared to the other proposed pipelines like the Northern Gateway, which went through a lot of untouched land. And this option was seen much better because it was simply a question of twinning an existing pipeline, adding another line beside an older one. So the impact is much less. And because we're not going to eliminate oil and gas from our economy in 2 weeks, we will need oil for a while longer.
But the delays and court challenges gave him time to reassess and to track the realities of climate change.
Most people don't realize that climate change has got us around the throat. We're in serious trouble in terms of our infrastructure, in terms of economic collapse. If we have to bear the cost of all the damage done from the fires and the floods and the hurricanes, we're finished.
He argues this pipeline is a small part of a bigger picture, one where our collective complicity in climate change cannot continue to be denied. He knows neither Alberta nor Canada can be weaned off fossil fuels overnight, but he says it needs to start.
The whole narrative of I'm losing my jobs or I'm losing my business because of this downturn and these different issues. Well, our society changes all the time. That exact narrative existed in, for example, in New York in 1910 when the whale oil industry was collapsing. And all those people, they lost their jobs. You know, this is what we call progress. So I think people have to face the reality that we have to change. We have to adapt. This is what adapt and mitigation is all about. I just see a painful adjustment, and I don't see any real way around it. I see an increased polarization. I see very, very nasty media wars and politics here for a few years. Very, very nasty.
Rocky believes Alberta squandered a chance to help itself.
As someone who was born and raised in Norway, where they charge the highest royalties in the world, $16 per barrel, and their Heritage Trust Fund is in the trillions now. I mean, they have prepared for a rainy day when they have to do something with climate change. It's easy to say, let's diversify the economy and let's not be dependent on oil and gas, but it's easy to say that, but how do you do it? The alternatives aren't quite here yet. So we have to be patient, we have to be kind, and because everybody depends on it, including myself.
But he feels history will not be kind to those who refuse to face reality.
It's a time we're going through is going to be looked back upon as a really backwards time. Stone Age of oil and gas. There's very little critical thinking. And I'm a nature lover to the bone, and I can't not speak up.
He points dramatically at his heart.
I cannot not speak up. It won't let me. Somebody has to lend a voice to that which cannot speak for itself.
I was in a really awkward position because I am very pro-environment.
Andrew McCracken is the paper's editor and only reporter. His wife is the publisher. But a few years ago, Andrew was the mayor.
And this pipeline was presented as some sort of like economic development project. And it's like, that is an economic development project in 1953.
He will tell you that this town of 1,000 people leans pro-pipeline, and he struggles with that.
I'm a far outlier. Like, the pipeline is the mother's milk for this community. But I hope that people in Valemount aren't smitten by this as some sort of like economic development scheme that's going to make us rich, because that's just not the case, right? So we need to take that off the board. And by the way, almost no one locally will work for this project. A few people will make sandwiches, you know, but that's not the extent. It's not like we have like a team of welders on standby.
So we'll just head up to the highway and make a right.
Still, when he drives us out to where the original pipeline runs, to where the new twinned pipeline would go, it's pretty clear its presence here seems benign.
I actually brought out Google Earth and traced the line. I didn't even know where the line went. You know, this thing is like so subtle.
There are yellow posts marking the route, just outside the gates to the garbage dump.
We are standing right on the pipeline route. This is the right-of-way. How often do you worry about what's underneath there?
Never. The pipeline is flowing oil beneath us, and it does a good job. The pipeline has integrity as a way of shipping oil. I don't think that's what the debate is about. I think the debate is what happens when the oil gets to the coast.
It's the safety around transport that he's identifying, from shipping off the coast to the safety of the rails that run through the town. As trains made longer with the addition of tank cars of Alberta Oil snake their way along a path parallel to the pipeline route, more than one community is getting uneasy about possible derailments.
This is my daughter, Ivy. Yeah, she's going to be turning 7 here shortly. That's my son, Ryder.
He points to pictures of his three kids framed on the wall of a spacious log home. A home and family he often travels away from for months at a time.
Most big projects, you're 6 in 1, so you're gone from the dirt, like the start of the job to the end of the job.
He's a pipeliner, building, maintaining, testing pipelines across the country. He just spent 4 months in northern BC. Last year, it was northern Ontario. He doesn't have trouble finding work, though he would welcome work closer to home for a while. He points out that there are pipelines crisscrossing this country, so he's a little confused about why this project is getting so much attention.
Well, obviously, I can see both sides of it, right? Like, environment's pretty important, and protecting the coastline and everything else. But to me, I think the economical benefits outweigh the risk. But there's a lot of people that don't, so it's... But I've seen firsthand, like, what kind of extent these outfits go to prevent, you know, leaks and other, you know, environmental stuff. So I just think if everybody had kind of a better understanding of how far they go to protect, you know, the pipelines and stuff like that, I think there might be a little bit of a different opinion, you know.
Straight down the middle, Daniel. That's it.
Drive, Danny, for
the crowd. A little further down the highway, there's an entirely different discussion on another large patch of grass.
Let's bring it on. We need the pipeline, so let's just get it over with.
And it's already under here. It's so deep underground, it doesn't really affect what goes on here.
These golfers are here every week, often several times a week, happily playing on a course that's always had a pipeline running beneath it.
I have not heard any opposition to the pipeline from our membership. Their desire would be, hurry up, expand it.
Chris Godette is the president of the Ledgeview Golf and Country Club. The city of Abbotsford owns it. His nonprofit runs it.
You know, this could continue for decades. I mean, really, it could. But that's not good for us. We want the certainty. So just hurry up and expand it.
Life on the beach.
He's juggling some uncomfortable realities to stay competitive. His clubhouse burned down. They've got work camp trailers for bathrooms for the restaurant.
I don't want to say trailer park, but we're operating out of trailers, which is not a long-term, it's not a successful long-term strategy.
We drive another 60 kilometers west to Burnaby, the city that in some ways has been the front line of the fight against this pipeline.
Police moved into this neighborhood in Burnaby, BC early this morning to remove protesters from a camp that was across from Kinder
Morgan's Trans Mountain. For 10 months, protest tents lined the narrow road leading to the terminal of the Trans Mountain pipeline.
This is my sanctuary, best place that it could be, that's here in the city limits. So I try coming down here as much as possible, with or without them, my grandchildren.
Crabs they found.
How many?
Walter Nahaney is a member of the Squamish Nation. He's brought his two granddaughters with him, and they scramble over the rocks, happily collecting crabs and paper cups.
10 crabs.
He's not kidding about this being a sanctuary in the city. The traffic of West Vancouver is just up the narrow path we use to get here. The Lionsgate Bridge towers over the inlet close by. Vancouver's skyscrapers are in the distance, and busy Stanley Park is across the narrows. But here, it's just us on the beach.
But you got all the otters, beavers, eagles, seals. See the killer whales come out here? Great whale. I seen a gray whale just over at the end of here.
He can talk all day about the animals he sees here. Two seals keep popping their heads in and out of the water as we chat. Like
hawks walking between us down here.
Looming in the harbor are all the ships at anchor waiting to load or unload cargo. He worries about more tankers passing by a spot that he's used for swimming and fishing since he was a kid.
Everybody says everything's safe, but nothing's guaranteed. Those oils, you take a look at all those other disasters that happened around the world.
Do you take any comfort at all in governments that say, you know, we haven't had that magnitude of a spill right here?
Well, I'd say not yet. That's all I got to say to that one, not yet. Gradually, it's going to happen if there's going to be more oil ships out here.
Can I let them go now?
Yes.
Okay.
I just hope they don't crash. Put them in the water, baby. Hope nothing happens. That's what I hope. Put them in the water?
From the CBC Archives, that's Anna Maria Tremonti, former host of The Current. We've been listening to excerpts from a documentary she made back in 2019 about the contentious Trans Mountain Pipeline project. Now the expansion is almost complete, but the debate over its legacy is far from over. That's all for Storylines this week. My documentary originally aired on The House. It was produced by Jennifer Chevalier. Storylines is produced by Craig Dessen. The show is part of the CBC Audio Doc Unit. If you liked our show, and especially if you like documentaries about Canadian politics, history, and geography, please give our podcast a 5-star review. I'm Alison Dempster. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.